Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Well, after Saturday's exciting game, the Pirates look to come out Sunday afternoon to take the series from the San Diego Padres. Unfortunately, fell just a bit short after a late inning rally by the Friars gave them the edge in the series. They took it 2-1 over the Pirates. And we're going to talk about just exactly what we saw this weekend. Hello, everybody. Welcome back inside to the Bucks Dugout. Talk the Plank, a Pittsburgh Pirates podcast, episode 62 of our biweekly podcast. Jake Slobodnik joining you. Nathan Hirsch has the day off after he flew the 747 alone last time out. So we're going to give him a break today and hope you can join me in the conversation here today. We're coming to you live from Spotify Live, and we're going to discuss the Pirates 3-game series with the San Diego Padres. As mentioned before, Pirates coming up on the short end of that stick, falling 2-1, Sunday's game going to San Diego in the rubber match, 5-2, that one. Padres took that one after a late ninth inning two-run frame. The Padres were able to run away with the game, essentially. Some things going on there. Saturday's game, lots of fireworks, not just after the game, if you were there in person, courtesy of Zambelli Fireworks. It was a good game all around. Friday sort of set the tone, made us think that maybe the Pirates were going to get swept again, but that is not to be. So we're going to talk about all three of those games here today. Let's start with the aforementioned Friday contest. 7-3 was the final. Padres able to put up 2 runs in the third, fifth, and sixth innings, and add just another one to put the nail in the coffin in the seventh. The Pirates mustered 3 runs, 2 of them coming in the first off starter Yu Darvish. Zach Thompson looked a little rough for the Pirates, and again, he looked rough for the Pirates. 4 earned runs in 4 1/3 innings, only gave up 3 hits, walked 2, but gave up a home run to Ha-Sung Kim. Jake Cronenworth then homered off Sam Howard. It was just a big power day for the Padres that helped him climb to that win. Yu Darvish went 6 innings, gave up 8 hits, 3 earned runs, gave up a walk, and struck out 5, probably his best outing in a while for the Padres. Taylor Rogers came in the ninth and knocked down his 8th save. Handed Thompson his 3rd loss of the season. I think that game can be credited to bullpen management. Derek Shelton bringing in Aaron Fletcher once again in a high leverage situation. Didn't really work in his favor, really didn't go the way he wanted it. But we did see the debut of Bo Sulser. He looked absolutely amazing. 2 innings pitched, walked 3, but did strike out 1. I thought he struck out 2, but the official scoring has only 1 strikeout. But nonetheless, it was 2 shutout innings in his major league debut. So congratulations, Bo Sulser. In that game, Andrew Vogelbach, Diego Castillo, and Andrew Knapp both had 2 hits. Vogelbach going home with 2 RBIs in the game. Diego Castillo with the 3rd run for the Pirates. He drove in. But other than that, not much doing for the Pirates that day. Jack Sawinski, 1-for-4 in the game. Michael Chavis, 1-for-4. Started lower in the lineup, but still got on base. Sawinski and Brian Reynolds both 4 left on base throughout the first game. Brian Reynolds was somebody we're going to be talking about too, because he started off cold, and after riding a bit of a slump, he actually started picking himself up at the end of the series. We're going to talk about him a little bit as well. Saturday's game was a complete turnaround. After the Padres faced a 1-0 deficit after 1 inning, they put up 3 runs in the 4th inning. The Pirates came back to tie it in the 5th, and in the 8th inning, that's where things really picked up and the fireworks started coming out. The Padres put up 2 runs in the top half. Manny Machado took David Bednar to right center field, putting one in the bleachers and giving Bednar his 1st earned run of the year. But in the bottom of the eighth, when all things looked bleak, Michael Chavis came up. Nathan Hirsch's big hero came up and delivered with a line drive, two-run shot, part of a 2-for-4, 3-RBI day for Chavis. He didn't really start out too well, picked up a pair of strikeouts, but it's really what matters in the late innings that he had and what helped the Pirates sort of come back. Also happening for the Pirates in that game, Josh Van Meter had a nice little RBI double to right center field. Nobody really expected that, but he did that and helped the Pirates sort of add to their tally. Went 1-for-4 in the day with that lone RBI. And then in the bottom of the 10th, the Pirates were down 6-5 at the time after the runner from second scored in the top half of the inning. All looked bleak for the Pirates, but Brian Reynolds came up after Key Brian Hayes drove home the RBI, the phantom runner on second, that is. And Brian Reynolds hit one down the right field line, chalked up as an error on Eric Hosmer, but honestly, it was hit hard enough that I would have changed it to maybe a hit. Hayes rounded third, headed for home, slid in head first, or dove in head first, I should say, was initially called out by home plate umpire, forget his name at the moment, but slid in head first, initially called out. Then after an official review, he was deemed safe, and the Pirates walked it off winners. And that sort of split the series and made way for this afternoon's game, both teams with one win apiece. It was all up to this one. The Padres jumped out to a 1-0 lead in the third, and they added two more in the top of the seventh. Pirates got on the board in the seventh and in the eighth, but they only climbed back within one, and then a two-run ninth inning sort of put the Padres away for good. Very questionable decisions in this game, and we'll talk about it. Mitch Keller looked dominant in the Sunday bouts, but unfortunately suffering his fourth loss of the year. We're going to talk about him a little bit and why I think, you know, despite him being four losses, I think, you know, he still deserves some time. We'll talk about that going up. JT Brubaker, we're going to talk about him too. We're pretty much going to talk a lot about pitching and some of the lineup decisions that we saw this weekend, but ultimately, the Padres walking away with a 5-2 win on Sunday, taking home the series. The Pirates now, with an off day on Monday, have a chance to regroup against the Detroit Tigers on Tuesday. We'll talk about that later as well. So let's start with Friday's game. Zach Thompson looked bad again for the Pirates. Again, we talked about 4 earned runs in 4 1/3 innings. Gave up a home run to Ha-Sung Kim. It was right down the middle, essentially. That pitch it had no business being where it was, but Thompson, we all saw that his control and pitch decisions have been a little suspect lately, and it proved to be disastrous right there as Kim drove one deep out of the park. And then later in the game, when the Padres were threatening, I think it was in that fifth inning, the Padres had runners in scoring position. It was still tied at the moment. And out of all people in the bullpen, Derek Shelton opts to go with Miguel Del Pozo 2.0 and Aaron Fletcher. He gives up an earned run, one of those earned runs going back to Thompson. And that's just sort of what put the Padres away for good in that game. Heath Hembree and Sam Howard each gave up an earned run in an inning pitched each. So ultimately just not a good pitching day for the Pirates. Despite out-hitting, you know, despite a great offensive day, I mean, out-hitting the Padres 10-7, the pitching is what really cost him in the end. It really spoiled the looks of Daniel Vogelbach and Diego Castillo in that game. And, of course, Andrew Knapp, a rare two-hit game. Just bad pitching all around, and that's sort of – and I questioned the decision to bring in Aaron Fletcher just because, the proof speaks for itself, or his line speaks for himself. The guy is not good in high leverage situations. He's more of a mop up rule guy. He was questioned why he was even brought into Pittsburgh when they claimed him off waivers even before the season started. I still question that. I question why Shelton went for him instead of anybody else that's worth a damn in that bullpen. If it was a matchup thing, I don't know. I don't know what was going on in Derek Shelton's head, why he thinks Aaron Fletcher is the next like big thing in the bullpen. But to me, he's just another Miguel Del Pozo 2.0. I tweeted that out during the game and it got some nice traction on it. So people obviously agree that this is just another tank master, I guess. I don't even know if we're going to say tank master, because I don't think the Pirates are in that spot to tank again. If they are, the fan base would just absolutely be livid. But yeah, that's another thing I don't understand. Heath Hembree's looking a little shaky for the Pirates after starting off pretty good, I would say. He wasn't locked down like some of the other guys in that bullpen. But yeah, Heath Hembree looked a little rusty, and he's looking pretty bad, honestly. Not walking too many people, but striking out or but giving up hard hits and earned runs is definitely one thing that's really towering over him. Sam Howard continues to be Sam Howard. I don't know when the end of the rope is for him. Hopefully it's soon, because he hasn't really shown anything. He hasn't really shown anything to the Pirates fan base since the cracking down of spider tech and sticky stuff. Again, there's no real correlation to that. There's nothing proven that Sam Howard was using that, but it's just so coincidental that after all that, all the cracking down of that, that's when he sort of just tapered off. And he hasn't really looked that good since. Again, we mentioned already, Bo Seltzer looked good, so we're not going to highlight him too much. Let's flash forward to Saturday's game. Another great offensive day for the Pirates, out hitting the Padres 8-7. Very slim margin there, but nonetheless, the Pirates still did that. That's the thing. The Pirates were hitting pretty well in the first two games. It's just delivering plating the runners that are on base at get on is just a little. It was really complicated to do for the Pirates. Key Brian Hayes and Michael Chavis each went 2-for-4. Chavis, again, that big two-run home run, finished the day with 3 RBIs, only limited himself to 2 runners left on base. He did not look like he had a bad day at all. He looked pretty good, honestly. It looked like pretty much what we saw when we first got him from the Red Sox, and it kind of carried over into Sunday, too, even though he was only used as a pinch hitter once, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Key Brian Hayes really on a hot streak hitting wise, and we'll cover that after we recap the Sunday finale. Brian Reynolds broke the slump that he was in, got a hit, got 2 walks on the day. And overall, he just looks more patient. He looks more patient, more comfortable at the plate. Doesn't look scared like he normally did in the first few weeks. I don't know if that was because of the illness he was dealing with, the possible COVID strike that he had. I don't know if that slump can be credited to him feeling sick, but it's good to see that he looks better out on the plate. So he doesn't look as shaky as he did in the opening weeks of the season. Jake Marisnyk, man, we can't talk about Saturday's game without talking about his contributions. Didn't make not one, but 2 highlight reel catches that, in my opinion, helped keep the Pirates in that game. If he doesn't make those catches, the Padres continue to pile on the runs, and we're talking about a potential sweep here going into Sunday. But, you know, he may not be doing much at the plate right now, but he is doing so much in the outfield. I know Sunday's game might be a little bit more questionable with that statement, just because it looked like he made a few poor choices on Sunday. But I'm going to give him credit where credit's due. Saturday, he looked absolutely phenomenal. And if I have to give credit where credit's due, I'll give it to Josh Van Meter as well. An RBI double, not many people thought he was going to do anything, but earned himself probably another solid 5 games of starting time, which I know fans don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that, but that seems to be the law of the jungle here. Diego Castillo had a hit in that game. So did Roberto Perez. Perez also had another hit Sunday's game, an RBI single, and 2 people had 2 hit games. Jack Sawinski, who I personally think he is really settling into the major league system. I don't think he's a bust. I don't think he's terrible. I think it just took him a little bit of a learning curve to get acclimated. I mean, he jumped the whole way from AA Altoona to the MLB level, completely bypassing AAA, albeit on different circumstances. It's not like he was a prized possession for the Pirates and they rushed him to the show. That's not the case. He was sort of called up in emergency time. But since then, he's looked pretty solid. 2-for-3 today. Nothing more you can ask about or ask him from that. A run as well. Only left 1 on base. Didn't strike out. And if we look over the past 2 games, Saturday and Sunday, hasn't struck out once. So he's patient at the plate. He picks out good pitches. He's not like a guy who's going to go down swinging and missing most often. He's going to try to put bat on ball. He's done that fairly well, I would say, since he's come up. And I will say it is surprising to me that Derek Shelton has been starting him almost every day. I thought he was going to start him one day after he gets his first major league hit, then he would sit the rest of the way, sort of like Marcano, And I know it's a different scenario, but I really thought that Sawinski was going to get wasn't going to get as much action as he has been. But I'm glad to see that Derek Shelton is trusting him in the outfield, and I hope we see more of that going forward. Talking about Michael Chavis, he brought in for one at bat in Sunday's finale, went 0-for-0 with a sacrifice fly that at least got the Pirates within one of the Padres. So, like him or hate him, Chavis has been delivering this weekend, and I think he's really earned some solid playing time. Why he didn't start this game is beyond me. And Derek Shelton can't say matchup because, I mean, last night his home run was against a right-hander in Steven Wilson. So if he's going to claim that putting a right-handed batter on a right-handed pitcher, I know Musgrove is different than Steven Wilson, but I would have given Chavis at least another opportunity to play, and I would have put him at first base, in my opinion. He played solid defensively Saturday, and Sunday you look at what Yoshi Setsugo did. Two of four, and I'm going to say they're Mickey Mouse hits. I don't want to downplay Yoshi Setsugo more than I already am, just because I feel like it's unfair to the players to downplay them as much, but he's 2-for-4, but he blooped one into left field that still resulted in an out of some sort. Brian Reynolds thrown out third on that, and then Yoshi got lucky. Had he lined one right back to the relief pitcher at the time, I think it was Suarez, lined one back to him in and out of his glove. So love it or not, that could have been a line out. But thankfully for him, it went down as a hit. So I would take those two hits with a grain of salt. I don't think Yoshi has been spectacular at all, and I think Pirates Twitter would agree with me. You look at his defense at first base, and he is just looking so shaky. He can't pick one out of the dirt anymore. I don't understand how they gave Cole Tucker the throwing error on Yoshi Setsugo's missed pick. Now, I understand that, you know, it wasn't a spot on throw, but as a first baseman, you have three primary goals, and that's pick one out of the dirt, extend when needed, and overall just receive a throw that's right at you. Those are the three things you need to do as a first baseman. Yoshi Setsugo can't do – I haven't seen him stretch too much, but I'm going to credit that to a small sample size, not many that he could stretch out to get. But watching – over the past few nights, Yoshi has looked terrible trying to pick one out of the dirt. And overall, Chavis looks so much better. He looks more comfortable at first base, especially on awkward throws. It was yesterday, I think it was a throw by Diego Castillo. Don't quote me on that, but I think it was an errant throw by him. Not an errant throw, but definitely one that wasn't 100% accurate. Chavis was able to keep his footing on the base, snow cone it, and make sure that the out was secured. It was ultimately, I think they were initially called out, and then Padres tried to challenge it, but ultimately the call stood, and I owe a lot of that to Michael Chavis for the way he handled that play, because that was one where, you know, you're thinking multiple things at one time, and, you know, it's something where you don't have much reaction time to do. And Chavis looked absolutely very calm throughout in that entire thing. Ice in the veins. There was no, you know, he wasn't too scatterbrained. He was just focused on making the play, which he ultimately did. Then you go to Setsugo on Sunday. I don't know about him. He just looks so scared at the plate, looks scared on defense. It's hard judging how exactly he's playing because, I mean, You can't show your fear on the field. But when I look at Yoshi Setsugo and he's at the plate, I can tell just by looking at him that he's thinking, "Oh my God, I have to make a hit. I have to make a hit, or I'm going to get caught." Like, it's almost like he's thinking before he hits instead of just going up there and swinging the stick. I mean, he just does not look comfortable to me. This is a good time for analytics because I just want to see how much, you know, he either chases or, I mean, yeah, he looks at pitches, but at the same time, there's got to be a fine line in what a guy can do before you really give him the axe. And Setsugo has not only had, you know, multiple chances in the MLB, thinking about it, with the Dodgers and the Rays, he didn't do too much. For the Pirates, he looked good for a short period of time last season, but now he comes in and he's batting .194, and it should be lower, in my opinion, if we're being honest. Those two hits shouldn't have even happened, but they did. So Setsugo not really performing at first base. I would like to see more Michael Chavis there, or even as we approach, you know, this time where service time can't, you know, you got another year of service time and, you know, rosters start to look different. I would give Mason Martin a possible shot at first base. If you look right now in AAA, he is absolutely bashing the ball. 4 home runs, 17 RBIs. And before you even say it, 25 strikeouts. I know. But I would rather have a guy who's got a 303, 349, 671 slashing line than a guy who can't even pick one out of the dirt. And Mason Martin, I'm trying to look at his defensive errors or his defensive stats. And might have to look at that a little bit more. But to me, I don't see many people picking on him for possible errors. I would rather see him at first base getting reps than Yoshi Setsugo, who has proven that he is more of a liability, hasn't done much to prove himself on this team. And that's just the way my thinking is. I don't know how other people would sort of stack it up. Maybe people would say that it's unfair to think that about Setsugo because, you know, he's competing against Chavis and Vogelback, who both can play first base, and, you know, it's a strong competition. Well, in my opinion, tough toenails. Yoshi Setsugo, I think his time is ending. It's coming to a close. And I think the Pirates are going to make moves. They should make moves to get better people that are better suited for this position and are better suited at the plate on the field instead of a guy who might have a hit here and there. I mean, last night at the game when I was there, every time Yoshi came up in a high leverage situation, whether he succeeded or not, I was like, you know, this is just not the matchup I want to see. I don't want to see Yoshi Setsugo up at the plate because I either know it's either going to be a high fly out or it's going to be a strikeout. God forbid, it might actually be a double play. So, you know, when your mindset is like that, you can't see a guy anymore. You can't see a guy like that on the field anymore. I mean, Ben Gamel, you might have the same ideology about him, but at least he can put bat on ball more often. He makes it up in the field too. I mean, him and Mariznick look fantastic on the field. When there's a risky hit ball hit to them, they make sure that play is made, or at least they give 110% each time. Yoshi just looks lost on the field. So let's talk about something good though. Brian Reynolds, we talk about, you know, how he struggled at the beginning of the year, but now he looks a lot better. Last night, when he was, you know, Saturday night's game, 1-for-3 with an RBI, 2 walks, just demonstrated great plate discipline, which he's always had, but it looked so much better this weekend. It looked like he was really trying to focus on taking pitches and drawing walks as opposed to trying to make everything happen with putting a ball in play. And that's what we need more of. He drew another walk Sunday afternoon, went 1-for-2, scored a run as well. Now gets his average above 200, which we like to see. Maybe he's due for an upward trend. So I hope Brian Reynolds, I mean, obviously his glove in the field speaks for itself. We can't really talk too much more about that. But he's looked so much better this weekend. Keith Ryan Hayes looks the same, and that's in a good term. It's currently standing at a 333 average and an 841 OPS after Sunday's finale. That's definitely something good for the young Key Brian. I would like to see him get a home run or more extra base hits here and there, but I'll tell you what, for a guy who is putting bat on ball, finding gaps, finding holes in the infield and putting into the outfield, Hayes is doing his job no matter where he is in the order. That's the best thing about him. He can lead off. He can bat third. He can bat second even. And I'm sure if you put him down in the bottom of the order, which I wouldn't want to see, and many fans probably don't want to see either, he could probably generate some production there too. So we have to at least highlight what Hayes has been doing in terms of his contributions. I'm trying to do some quick math from the weekend overall. 1-for-4 on Friday, 2-for-4 on Saturday. So he's already 3-for-8 and 1-for-3 on Sunday, 4-for-11, not a terrible look to the weekend for Hayes. So he did his job at the plate. Would have liked to see maybe a multi-hit game today, but I mean, you can't complain too much about what Key Brian's done. So we're just beating a dead horse. I want to talk about Mitch Keller a little bit too, because I have been a Mitch Keller hater for, you know, probably since I've started this show last year. And, you know, Nathan can back me up, and I'm sure the tweets speak for themselves. But I really thought today was his best outing, and today holds a little bit more weight. 6 innings pitched, 5 hits given up, only 1 earned run given up, didn't walk a batter at all, and 5 strikeouts. And this is coming against a lineup where you got guys like Jake Cronenworth, Manny Machado, Eric Hosmer, who made the Pirates pay dearly Saturday with a three-run shot to the opposite field, Ha-Sung Kim, who's looked good this entire series. But Mitch Keller was able to keep his cool, and after giving up a run to, I think it was Machado, yes, Manny Machado in the third inning of play, Mitch Keller otherwise looked very, very solid today. And I think this should speak for how well he's sort of picked up his game. Velo's looking a lot better. I think he clipped 100 actually in the late innings, so he was able to carry that over. Unfortunately, I think he only finished with 60-something pitches. I'll have to look at that. Oh, no, he finished with 85. Okay, I don't know why I thought he finished with 60-something, but 85 total pitches, 56 strikes. That's not a bad day at the office for him. Chase DeYoung, two unearned runs given up, still an ERA of zero. But I'm just going over some of the bullpen things we see today. But going back to Mitch Keller, definitely looks a lot better today than he did last time out. And overall, I think he's starting to ride a bit of a hot streak. If you can put up numbers like that against a good opponent like the Padres, your future looks definitely brighter than what it's been, you know, what your past has been. Also want to talk about JT Brubaker, who pitched yesterday. I will eat crow here. I put out a meme through the Bucks Dugout Twitter. Yes, that was me. I think anybody with a pulse will know that I am not a Brubaker fan. Gave a three-run shot to Eric Hosmer, and that just soured my mood on him. But looking at the general scheme of things, five innings, that home run was pretty much the only bad part of the game. Struck out four, walked one, gave up only five hits. That's not a bad day at the office for Brubaker. Definitely better than what he's normally showing. Dylan Peters looked good out of the bullpen. So the pitching yesterday looked really good, and that all started with Brubaker. I think that was definitely one of his better outings. And if we see more of that going forward, it would have been nice to see here we go. I was thinking Keller finished with 66, but it was actually Brubaker that finished with 66 yesterday. I would have liked to see him maybe go another inning just to see what he's got. But I mean, I'm not going to downplay Derek Shelton turning to Dylan Peters with the way he's been pitching lately. But going back to Brubaker, 66 total pitches, 42 strikes. I mean, the guy was hitting the zone. He looked comfortable other than that three-run shot. And I think that was more of a, I don't want to say a fluke home run because Hosmer does have power, but it's definitely harder to hit an opposite field home run on that sort of pitch. And Hosmer was able to do that. I think simulations would agree that that's not happening most of the time. So I will not credit that too much to Brubaker. Things like that happen. Not every outing is perfect. So I'll give Brubaker the benefit of the doubt in that one. And despite the three-run home run, he did look much better after that. He didn't let it get to him and sort of settled down after that. And I think that's one thing that it's a mental game, you know, and especially with Brubaker, you don't want to get in your own head after something like that. And I think that's something he's been doing lately. And that's why sort of whenever, you know, when one run comes across, the whole automobile just starts to fall apart. And thankfully yesterday he kept a cool head, realized, hey, I got a team behind me that can put up runs, do good offensively, and we got some guys in the bullpen that can help me out. So, you know, I'm going to stay calm. I'm going to go five at least, and, you know, do my job at least on that part. One thing I did notice about Saturday's game while being there, Derek Shelton never used a mound visit, and I found that kind of suspicious because it's not like his pitchers were doing bad, but it seems like in any sort of negative atmosphere, his first resolution was to pull him and go with the bullpen. And I get Shelton's bullpen management has looked a lot better in recent weeks, but I would have at least used maybe a mound visit, at least with Will Crow. I think that, you know, Saturday Crow looked a little shaky, giving up a run and a walk, not striking out anybody. But I would have liked to seen maybe a mound visit before going straight to Bednar. Bednar, I think, should have been saved for the ninth inning. And Stratton, you have him for those extra innings instead of using him in the ninth and the tenth. And I think it might have had a better result had he just used a mound visit. But, I mean, that's just my opinion. I think that, you know, obviously it worked out for him Saturday night. But Sunday kind of bit him in the rear end a little bit, pitching Stratton on yet another day. 2/3 of an inning. He gave up two runs, two of them, or both of them earned, actually, and that drove up his ERA a little bit. So I don't know what he was turning to, but I think they were credited also because it was after Miguel Jure was brought in, and we all know Miguel Jure is just not a good relief option. So it's, you think what you want. I would have thought that maybe the bullpen management could have been a little bit better this weekend. And I know, what do I know? I'm not a guy in the major leagues. I'm just a guy who's podcasting, and I can already hear the comments saying that. But overall, I think it's time for Jure to go. I think bullpen management needs tightened up just a little bit. I think it's maybe getting to Derek Shelton's head a little bit, just how well it's been working out. Cause I think he's over relying on it too much instead of, you know, just letting the guys do their thing. That's, you know, that could also be, you know, just something they looked up, you know, maybe they had a meeting about it. Like, we're any sign of trouble, we're pulling you because of this, you know, how good of a team this is, the good of the team that we're facing is. And overall it worked Saturday, did not work Sunday. Musgrove came back to Pittsburgh, gave up seven hits, but only one earned run, struck out eight, picked up the win, his fourth of the year, and helped the Padres take the series 2-1 against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, the Pirates will have an off day on Monday, and they will travel to Detroit for a two-game miniseries starting Tuesday. Bryce Wilson is the tab starter. He will go against Michael Pineda. But I think it might be another opener situation, at least in my opinion it should be, with the way it worked last time. Peters opening the game and Wilson coming in. Both of them looked stellar that game. So don't be surprised if we see Derek Shelton utilize the opener in that game. Then Wednesday, the finale, that's a 1:10 start. The Tuesday game is a 7:10 start in Detroit. The finale is at 1:10. We're going to see Jose Quintana going against Tarik Skubal. Quintana looked great in his first, in his last outing. That was striking out nine hitters, did get the loss, but ultimately looked so much more comfortable than he did in the outing prior. And with this Detroit team that's 7-13, thought of as one of the better younger squads in the MLB to start the season. Let's take a look at what they've done so far. I think the Pirates could possibly take both of these games if they are on point and if the management is a little bit better than what we've seen. Detroit 7-13, as we mentioned. I'm trying to pull up their team here so we can take a look at just how they've been doing lately. They won against the Dodgers yesterday on Saturday night. But they're still playing them right now. But prior to that, they were on a five-game losing streak, getting swept by the Minnesota Twins and losing to the Colorado Rockies on that Sunday the 24th, 6-2, then losing the first two of the series to LA. So they're not in the greatest of spots right now. The only notable thing that they've had to their credit so far is Miguel Cabrera's 3,000 hit. But other than that, as a team, they haven't been playing the best of ball. The Pirates are at least staying competitive in these games they're playing. I know it's not that big of a sweep, or it's not really a sweep if they win two in a row. But I think the Pirates have a good chance here to take both of these games. And then after that, they actually face the Cincinnati Reds for the first time. The Reds heavily struggling this year, 3-19. I don't know how they got this bad, but I mean, they are just, I mean, I think the offseason sort of spoke for itself in what direction the Reds are going in. And that's, they don't have a direction. 3-19 on the season. That could be, I think, the biggest chance for the Pirates to earn their first sweep. They have another off day Thursday. They start the series Friday at 6:40 at Great American Ballpark. So I'm going to say in these two series, I don't know when Nathan's going to want to record. I would say after the Cincinnati series, but we could record after Detroit. That'll be up for discussion. I say that they take both of them from the Detroit Tigers. And you know what? For sake of being optimistic this time around, I'm going to say they sweep the Reds too. So I'm going to say they go on a five-game winning streak after today. I think the offense is going to click a little bit better. I think Brian Reynolds is starting to find that momentum is going to work well. Daniel Vogelback had a bit of a cold streak this weekend, but I think good off day will help him dearly, and I think he looks better. He'll look better in these next two series. Pitchers are still TBD for the Cincinnati Reds series, so I can't really speak on the pitching matchups that we see there. But I will say, I think the Pirates do take both of them from Detroit, and I think they're going to sweep the Reds just with how bad they're playing. I think that's going to be a good pick-me-up series for the Pirates. You know, get three easy wins from the Reds, who have been heavily struggling. If they face Hunter Green, they might have a little bit of difficulty, but I mean, there's really nothing going for the Reds right now. Joey Votto's hitting, I think, 124 or something. He's not hitting that great. So even the guy that they're putting all their marbles on is just not doing so well. So this is a good time for the Pirates. The time to win is now, and I think they could absolutely do that. So we'll see what they can do. And like I said, not sure when Nate's going to want to recap these series. If not, maybe record Thursday after the Tiger series and then record again Sunday after the Red series. But you can find out more about that on Bucks Dugout on Twitter. And we will recap those series when the time comes. Just to leave off on this episode and a little bit of optimism. Minor league system looking good for the Pirates right now. They got three hitters hitting above 300 in AAA. One of them being Josh Bissonnette, who I never saw as the guy to hit consistently. He's 6-for-19 so far this season. Only played in six games, a very small sample size, but got to give credit where credit's due because a fall off could happen at the snap of a finger, and you may never hear from Josh Bissonnette again. Cal Mitchell, 305, 391, 542 slashing, and Martin's, as we mentioned, slashing 303, 349, 671. Martin leads the team in triples with four, has four home runs on the season, he leads the team in homers with four, and also in RBIs with 17. So, Charrington, if you're listening to this, I would definitely consider giving Mason Martin a promotion here soon, getting Yoshi off the roster, clearing a space for him, possibly Cal Mitchell too. Just the way he's been playing through 18 games this season, 18 of 59 at the plate, five doubles, three homers, not too bad. So the youth, they're on their way. G1 Bay also looks pretty good. Had a five hit performance the other night, just fell a triple side cycle, I believe. O'Neill Cruz still struggling, but I don't really credit that too much. I think he's just sort of annoyed at this point that he's not in the MLB. So I think we could see a lot of youth come up here shortly. And I think the Pirates could definitely look a lot different in the coming weeks. Let's see what they do now that the manipulation time for service time has sort of passed us. I think we're going to see a little bit of a different look and different landscape for the Pirates in the coming weeks. Well, that'll do it. The Pirates falling 2-1 in the 3-game series against the Padres over the weekend. Definitely not a bad series at all. Obviously, you want to see them win the series, possibly sweep. But for a team like the Padres in a tough NL West division, came into the weekend 13-7, and they finished the weekend with a record of 15-8. That's definitely not something to turn your nose up on. The Pirates, I think, definitely played competitively this weekend, and I think it's good momentum to carry into the 2-game set against the Tigers and again into the 3-game set against the Reds. Definitely a good stepping stone for them. We'll see how they handle in Detroit here in a couple days. Again, they are off Monday. They pick things up back on Tuesday, 7:10 first pitch time at Comerica Park. Don't forget to follow Bucks Dugout on Twitter at Bucks Dugout. You can follow me at _RadioJake, the biggest Pirates cynic in the world. Come make fun of me on my Twitter. You can also follow Nathan _Hirsch on Twitter. He is not in the episode today, but we do want to spread some love his way. Go out, follow him as well. We've had a little bit of banter back and forth with the Michael Chavis weekend that he's had. So, you might be able to see a little bit of banter from both of us. But that's all on that. And make sure to check out BucksDugout.com for more stories. We got some up from Austin Bechtold lately. He's dug a little bit into the statistical realm of things, looking at some of the stories that are down there. They are updated daily. And speaking of Austin Bechtold's writing, just wrote a story about Roberto Perez's defense. So if you want to go check that out, go to BucksDugout.com. And don't forget that we are live after every series here on Spotify Live. So if you want to join in the discussion, that's your way to do it. And make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts and everywhere you find your podcasts. This has been Talk the Plank, episode 62 of Pittsburgh Pirates Podcast. I've been Jake Slobodnik signing off, and we'll see you next time.